Support for 30 Days of West Virginia Music is provided by Kinship Goods, proud supporter of DIY music and the arts. Locally shipped worldwide at kinshipgoods.com. Support is also provided by Bunge Jam Music, featuring the album Todd Burge Live on Mountain Stage 2006 to 2015. More information at toddburge.com.
In the 80s and even into the 90s, if you had a record or a CD out, you kind of had an in to get a tour booked. It wasn't that hard. Like, because having a CD out was a big thing, and having a record out was a big thing. I mean, I remember when, if you had a record out, it was one thing, but if you had a CD out, that was an even bigger deal, you know, because that was the new technology. The way I really sound old here talking about this.
I'm Joni Deutsch, and this is 30 Days of West Virginia Music, a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting and A Change of Tune. Throughout the month of June, we are celebrating some of the folks who are making the West Virginia music scene wild and wonderful. 30 days, 30 brand new West Virginia music interviews. And today, a long-standing pillar of the Morgantown scene who has been a rocker, a songwriter, and even a producer. This is Mark Poole. Can you give us your name and what do you do in West Virginia for the music scene?
My name is Mark Poole. I run a recording studio called Zone 8 Recording out of a little house. And it's technically outside of Morgantown city limits, but right across from the Coliseum, across the river from the Coliseum. And I play in a band called the Phantom Six. That's my main band, and a couple other bands that I'm sort of a side man in, but Phantom Six is my number one thing, I guess.
How did you get started in music?
A really good friend of mine, Scott Fetty, who was lived in Morgantown for a long time, is a great drummer. I kind of got started through him. He had a band in junior high school, and I went to see them play at the talent show, and you know, I was just kind of blown away that, you know, I could have friends that are 14 years old and they were up on stage playing Taking Care of Business, and they had explosives on stage, and the one guy, Gary Turner, wore a top hat and he jumped off a Fender Princeton amplifier when the explosion went off. And if I don't know if you are familiar with the Fender Princeton, but it's only like 10 inches tall. So it was a very Spinal Tap moment. But Scott, like, we were skateboarding buddies, and he was kind of like, well, Mark, you know, if you get a guitar, ask for a guitar for Christmas. I could probably get you in this band. So that's kind of how it got started. I have to thank Scott Fetty for that.
After that initial experience with the talent show and seeing, you know, your friends could do this and you could too, how did you use that passion moving forward? What was the first official music thing that you were able to do?
Well, convince my parents to get me a guitar for Christmas. And then by May of that year, Scott made good on his promise, and I was in that band and playing house parties and stuff like that. So I guess that was, you know, the first thing I did as far as moving forward to actually becoming a musician. I started taking lessons off of John Gallagher in Parkersburg. He's a well-known in the area, great musician, and he owns a store there now, Gallagher Music, but he's, you know, everybody in Parkersburg seems like has taken lessons off of John at some point.
So from there to the Phantom Six, I guess you would consider yourself more of a rocker? Were you more of a singer? Were you more of a songwriter?
No, not at all. Not for years. Well, I played in cover bands, and I really just tried to get good at playing guitar. No singing, no songwriting, till I'd say I was in my early 20s or something. But I played in cover bands all through high school, and we played in bars and stuff when we were, you know, before we were 18 and allowed in, way before 63 Eyes. Actually, the band that was the turning point was a band called the Larrys, which, you know, Todd Burge was in the Larrys, and Jimmy Clinton and Wes Poole, but no relation, but guys I knew from high school. But the cover bands kind of taught me how to play. And then I guess it was like early college, Todd had formed the Larrys with these two other guys, and I wasn't in the band. I was just friends with them. But they were the only band in Parkersburg at the time doing original music. And they really couldn't play their instruments at the time at all. I mean, the first gig, I went to see them, you know, because they were my friends and stuff. The first gig, Wes, the drummer, he had a Sony Walkman in his pocket, and he'd have to play a cassette tape of the practice between each song so he knew what to do on the drums. So, I mean, they were really just starting out, and I'd already kind of made a little bit of a name for myself in town as a guitar player in these, like, high school cover bands sort of thing. So everybody thought I was crazy when I wanted to join the Larrys because, you know, they sort of thought of them as a joke, but I just thought, I don't want to play in cover bands the rest of my life. I'd rather go with these guys who are my friends doing original music. So anyway, the Larrys ran its course after about 3 years, and Todd had moved to California to work for the record label. Larrys got a record deal, actually, a few years later, and Todd moved to California to work for the record label, and the whole thing kind of fell apart. Just, you know, another one of those stories of your first record label experience being bad sort of thing. The label fell apart, the band fell apart, and then Todd moved back to West Virginia, and that's when we started 63 Eyes. That was the really big changing point for me, where I started wanting to write songs and sing a little bit and, you know, just developed. I got a real thrill out of, you know, being able to play a song that I'd written. So then 63 Eyes was around for about 10 years. So, you know, I kind of developed as a songwriter, I think, during that period.
So you were with Todd Burge for a good period of time. What was that like?
It was great. I mean, Todd's been a big influence on me, really, because he was the principal songwriter in the Larrys. And he was really the principal songwriter in 63 Eyes. So I feel like I learned a lot, you know, by his methods and stuff. I don't really think we worked the same way, but I mean, he definitely was the person that demonstrated that it wasn't that hard and it could be done. Todd was always like, if you spend more than an hour on it, then, you know, you've already overthought it. So that was kind of his method, I guess. But, you know, we had disagreements over the years, and, you know, sometimes there was maybe a little bitterness some at times, but we're almost like family, to be honest. We've been together so long. We're thinking about doing something to commemorate the release of the 63 Eyes Looking for Mothman album, which came out in 87. That's 30 years ago. Todd got it remastered. I wanted to remix it. I wanted to get them all, because I have a studio and stuff. I wanted to get the masters and remix the whole thing, but that ended up seeming like a huge undertaking, even finding the masters at this point.
In terms of other releases, I heard that the Phantom Six are, I guess, quote-unquote, back and recording another release.
Yeah, well, we never went away, but if you sort of trace the pattern of my musical career, it moves very slowly. I mean, I'm not one of these guys that can get a record out every 2 years, but it's consistent, though. I've kept doing it for a long time. I don't plan on stopping, but yes, Phantom Six never went away, but it's been 5.5 years since our first record came out.
And who else are in the Phantom Six?
Billy Matheny, who I know you know, is our bass player. Billy Sheeter, second guitar player. I play guitar. Clint Sutton is the drummer. And Woody O'Hara, well, Woody's status in the band is kind of in question right now. He's welcome to be in the band, but we're not sure he wants to be in the band. He's just busy, really busy. He's actually a great drummer. Everybody in the Phantom Six is a drummer, which is kind of weird. But Woody is a great drummer, but all he gets to do in the Phantom Six is, you know, hit the cowbell and play tambourine. So it's not his main gig. But yeah, that's who's in the band.
Well, take us through this. Again, you wouldn't call it a reunion because you never left, but take us through this reunion phase if you do release a new record by the end of the year.
Well, after the record came out in 2011, it came out in late 2011, I basically spent all of 2012 trying to push it and promote it. We're not really a band that can head out on the road for long periods of time. Clint has a family, and Billy Sheeter tunes steel drums, and he travels all over the world doing that anyway. So, I mean, he could tour, but it wouldn't be anything super long. He's got a lot of clients that depend on him. We've maintained pretty regular practice schedules. I mean, 2012, like I say, was sort of spent promoting the record in whatever way we could. We shot two videos. We're a DIY band, so we made the videos ourselves. You know, we played a good bit of gigs that year, but, you know, we did a radio promotion, which is a lot of work. You pack up 400 copies of your CD and mail it out to different stations all over the place. So 2012 was kind of pretty much spent. And after that, we just started writing songs for a new record, but we're like, you know, we get two songs done a year sort of thing. So it, to me, it doesn't feel like a reunion. It's just the end of a slow progress towards coming up, you know, with another 15 songs. And we're just about there. We've started recording it. We've got drum tracks down for, I think, 11 songs. We're kind of doing it separately because Billy's been out on the road a lot, Billy Matheny, that is. So Clint and I have been working on the drum tracks, and then I'll probably put my guitar stuff on next and then bring in the Billies.
What's it been like over the years seeing whether your West Virginia music friends like Billy Matheny or just generally the West Virginia music scene grow and change?
It's been great. It's cool seeing friends that have gone on to some pretty impressive success. Well, Todd's had a successful career. There's a band, Carmen DeBurn. They're from Morgantown, and they play, you know, in front of huge crowds all over Europe and stuff. I mean, it's awesome. Like I tell everyone, it's good for all the West Virginia bands when any band's successful because, you know, the tide rises with their success and everybody gets more notice. So, yeah, it's a great thing.
What's the biggest difference between the music culture in West Virginia now compared to, you know, 20 or 30 years ago when you first really started playing and touring around?
The internet, hands down. I mean, it's a completely different way you go about things. In the Larry's and 63 Eyes days, we had people writing us letters and, you know, it was all done snail mail. All your promotion, when you played in a town, you would, hopefully, if you'd played there before, you'd made a mailing list and you had 30 people in Lawrence, Kansas to send out mailers to, postcards saying, hey, we're coming back, you know, in June. Hope to see you there. It's just the internet's changed everything. Maybe something's lost. There was something really cool about that old method of doing stuff. I wouldn't say it's easier for bands. It's easier to network. The reason I wouldn't say it's easier for bands is because there's so many more bands now. In the 80s and even into the 90s, if you had a record or a CD out, you kind of had an in to get a tour booked. It wasn't that hard. Like, because having a CD out was a big thing, and having a record out was a big thing. I mean, I remember when, if you had a record out, it was one thing, but if you had a CD out, that was an even bigger deal, you know, because that was the new technology. Boy, I really sound old here talking about this. I think also I noticed a difference in, it seems like there were a lot more kind of rock and roll bands when we were starting out, and there's been a lot of move towards singer-songwriter and bluegrass kind of bands in West Virginia. Newgrass, maybe be a better word for it. You know, bands that play traditional instruments, but, you know, don't play traditional bluegrass. There's a lot of music that's bringing back the old-timey sounds. So I think that's one of the differences between the music scene between now and back in the 80s.
Did you ever feel like, whether you were with the Larrys or 63 Eyes or Phantom Six, did you ever feel like there was a moment where you thought, I broke through, I've made it with my music, this is the epitome of my career?
Yeah, yeah, there was. Well, I have to say that between the Phantom Six actually morphed out of a band called Moon that was after 63 Eyes and before Phantom Six. And we went through a bunch of lineup changes, but it was kind of like, you know, the band that I was the principal songwriter for. The last lineup of Moon, which was around 2009, basically is the lineup of the Phantom Six now. Really, it was, we just kind of changed our name around 2010, something like that. But to answer your question, when I felt like I'd broken through was I got a record label to put out. Moon released 3 albums over a course of 10 years or so, 10, 15 years. And the first one came out on a record label, Skyclad Records. It was kind of a punk label. And all these bands, you know, from the Larrys on, sort of had, we were kind of punk-influenced bands. This label, Skyclad, had put out, like, bootleg Sex Pistols records, and they'd put out albums for Rocky Erickson, who was in the 13th Floor Elevators. So he was, you know, kind of a hero of mine. I think that point, I just thought, this is it. I've made it. I'm on Skyclad Records. You know, our record's going to be, you know, shipped out all over the world, basically. You know, my friend Kim always refers to the Skyclad Records deal as a rags-to-rags story because, you know, it was just like, you know, so many people's first record label experience where, you know, you never see any money, and then, you know, a couple years into it, the record label goes bankrupt and you don't ever get your tapes back. It was that's basically how it turned out. But at the time, I felt like, you know, this is the beginning of a really lucrative, successful music career. I laugh because, you know, that's not even necessarily what I'm looking for now. But at the time, I was 24. It was very exciting.
What would you consider a successful music story today in 2017? If you were a band or an artist in West Virginia looking to make it big, like, what would you tell them would be like maybe a good indication that you're on the right track?
It's funny because nowadays a lot of times it's your success is measured by how many likes you get. I don't know. That doesn't seem like success to me. I feel like, I mean, I can only say from my standpoint, if I feel like I've made a good recording that I would hold up to other people's recordings and say it's just as good, then to me that's success. That's where I feel like bands should shoot to just make the best art that they can. If they achieve that, I feel like they've already had success. Anything you get on top of that is icing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. If you're, you know, my generation tends to like, you know, if I get over 10,000 followers or fans, that's a measure of my successfulness. And then others are just, you know, if I'm able to get 2 people at a bar listening to me to buy my record, that's success.
Yes. If at the end of a show, if people are clapping, that's success. I mean, you know, there's so many different levels you could define success at. For me, at the stage I'm in life, it's just like finishing a record and thinking it's good. If I get anything above that, it's great. That's really what I strive for, just making a really good record. And, you know, I'm pretty critical of my own music especially, but of music in general. I'm into songwriting. You know, the song's got to have certain elements for me to think it's a great song. So I work hard on songs. I mean, the lyrics especially, it's like, that's the hardest part for me. It's like, when you get a song and you're done with the lyrics and you're not embarrassed by it, that's success.
Dirth was a truck driver, battling his fame by his parents. You know, he took up the only profession he knew, driving a semi to pay the rent. You know, Dirth had a heart, hard as the asphalt he drove upon.
You mentioned songwriting. I also know that you do a number of production projects. In fact, for this series, I interviewed one of your more recent production projects with a band called Whiskey Victor.
Yes, they've actually, as the band, they have not been in the studio yet, but Anna has been in and recorded some songs by herself, and her sister's coming in this weekend. And I'm good friends with their dad, Rodney Bean. He was in a band in Morgantown called Granny's 12 Gauge, real high energy rock and roll band. The bass player that was in Moon was in that band, Jeff Schilling too, which Jeff was a very noticeable figure on the music scene because he was 6'11" and he only weighed 150 pounds.
What other production projects have you been a part of in West Virginia?
Oh man, there's been hundreds. I mean, possibly thousands at this point. I mean, I've had a studio since about 94, so 23 years, and I mean, some weeks I work 7 days a week. It's not all West Virginia bands, but 90% West Virginia bands. Some ones that really stand out in my mind that I really like, The Emergency, their first album. You know, I still put that record on and listen to it. That was one of my favorite ones I ever recorded. I like Billy Matheny's album before this one. You know, a lot of people think that the Strange Constellations record is his first record. It's his third record. The Born of Frustration album, I did that one in 2006. I listened to that this week. There's a lot of great West Virginia acts that have come to the studio over the years. There was a band called 100 Hurricanes I liked a lot. It's actually some Charleston guys. I don't know, you might know. I'm in a band called Latvian Radio that I'm just kind of I'm really more the producer, but I end up playing some guitar on it. That's been a project I've really enjoyed working on.
So it sounds like you, whether it is songwriting or, you know, being the guitarist or being the producer, you've just had a lot of hats to wear as someone in Morgantown and someone just generally as a West Virginia musician.
Yeah, but you know, I've always been a do-it-yourselfer, so I wanted to learn how to record from the very early days of being in the Larrys. I bought a 4-track, and that's kind of how it started, a 4-track cassette recorder, and the first 63 Eyes release was recorded on that 4-track. It was a cassette release, but we've since digitized it and sell it on CD too. But I've always wanted to learn the behind the scenes stuff in addition to perform, get good at my instrument, learn how to write songs. Just the whole culture of making records, just I want to know everything about it it's an obsession, and it's never died. It's like now it's like I've started getting into video production a little bit. I've did the two videos for that was on the Phantom 6 stuff for Corianna and a song called Plastic Rain. We did two videos for that, and you know, rather than find people that I knew who I knew how to do it, I had to go buy a camera, and I bought a ton of green screen using clamp lights and parchment paper to do the lighting. But yeah, it's I wear a lot of hats, but it's just like I'm just curious. I like to learn how to do that stuff. That's what's fun for me.
Is that work ethic? Do you think that comes from you being from West Virginia?
Maybe not. I think it's just the people that are around maybe always set a good example of you have to work hard no matter what you're doing. I mean, that sort of, it goes back to, you know, being a kid. My dad would always preach that to me. But, you know, when we started 63 Eyes, that maybe was the funnest band I was ever in because Todd had a real strong work ethic too. A lot of times you get in bands and, you know, there's different levels of commitment to the band. But when we started 63 Eyes, we were so committed. We practiced in a chicken coop, and we practiced from like 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day. The only time we didn't practice was on the days we had gigs. We'd come back off the road and we'd take one day off, and then we'd go back. We were at the chicken coop Monday morning, and we were at it really hard. And we played a lot of shows, too. I think Todd mentioned this when you interviewed him. I'm not sure when that was, a year or so ago, that in 63 Eyes we formed a country band so we wouldn't have to get day jobs, because that's the only way we could get work in town. No one would hire us playing originals, so we learned a bunch of Johnny Cash and Hank Williams songs and started doing that as our job. So between 63 Eyes and Triple Shot, we played something like 250 nights out of 1987. I only know this because I was the accountant for the band too. And I remember, you know, doing the books at the end of the year. It's like, man, we played a lot this year. So, you know, I really miss doing 63 Eyes for that reason. The everyone's got that really strong work ethic. But, you know, with Phantom 6, it's just a different scene. We're older, and Clint has two kids, and my parents are old, so they need some help on their houses, and they need some care and stuff. We're just not a band that can devote the same amount of time as we did in our 20s to what we're doing, but you know, that doesn't mean we're going to stop. We just have to move a little slower than we used to. I don't mean like we're hobbling around moving slower. We can't be road warriors like we'd like to be, you know, just too many life obligations, but we stick with it at our, you know, slow but continuous pace, and eventually we get a record out, and then we promote it, and the cycle starts over again.
So what about then the music scene? If there's one thing that you could impart or give back to the West Virginia music scene as part of your legacy, if you will, what would that one thing be?
Well, my studio's cheap. That's one thing. I like, my rates are the same rates that I was paying in the 80s for studio time. So I don't know. What I like giving back to the music scene is helping young bands in a way that maybe we didn't have when we were first starting out, as being kind of being able to direct young bands into how to make a good record and not make a lot of the mistakes we made. I mean, I guess the thing would be helping out younger bands starting out, don't have a lot of money, get a good recording. You know, one that's competitive with everything else you hear on the radio. To me, I feel like that's like the best thing I have to offer for the local music scene.
Mark Poole is part of the Phantom Six. You can find his tour schedule with the band and more music news at thephantom6.com and on social media. 30 Days of West Virginia Music is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting and A Change of Tune. This episode was written, edited, and produced by me, Joni Deutsch. Our associate producer is Nathan Thomas. Our digital promotions come from Josh Saul. Our theme was composed by Matt Jackford and performed by Montana Skies and John Cleary. You can hear more West Virginia music on A Change of Tune, airing Saturday nights at 10 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Follow us on social media. We love to hear from you. We're at A Change of Tune on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And for more West Virginia music chats, make sure to go to wvpublic.org/wvmusic and subscribe to our podcast feed. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.